right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. Got a great episode for you today. DJ and I got a chance to catch up with Adam Long when he was in town for the Players. Adam, of course, won the Desert Classic earlier this year in an enormous upset over Phil Mickelson, Adam Hadwin, and several others. This was, again, done during the Players Championship, so it's not the most timely episode, but we do talk a little bit about the Players, but for the most part, we talk about Adam's career and his rise from the lower levels of the professional tours and constant improvement to winning on the PGA Tour. Really is an incredible story. We spent a lot of time on that and then ultimately get into the great story of winning the Desert Classic and what that's done for him and how it's changed his life and all that. So we did want to delay this a bit till after the Masters, and we had a lot of other podcasts in the queue. So apologies for that delay on that. And before we get to Adam, I want to again mention, from now through May 31st, Callaway is donating $4 for every dozen ERC soft yellow golf balls that are sold. They're donating that to the Children's Miracle Network Hospital. It's a nonprofit organization that raises funds for children's hospitals as part of the industry-wide Play Yellow campaign. So be sure to pick up some ERC soft yellow golf balls with the Triple Track technology in stores or online at CallawayGolf.com. And please help support this amazing program. So without any further delay, here is our podcast with Adam Long. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We are joined here. I'm with DJ Pie. We are at TPC, Sawgrass, Marriott, something like that. PGA Tour winner, Adam Long. Welcome.
Wow. I can't say enough. This is a huge honor. I'm pretty nervous, though, so we'll see how this goes.
Well, let me loosen things up. I'm going to give you a bit of time here. I'm going to read your Wikipedia page in its entirety.
Oh, boy.
Which is a much more difficult job than it was like 6 weeks ago, because you didn't have one when you won the Desert Classic. But here it goes. Long was born in New Orleans and grew up in St. Louis. He attended Francis Howell High School. He graduated from Duke University with a degree in sociology. He is the son of Gordo and Jane and the brother of Lindsay. That's your Wikipedia page.
Well,
it's all factual, right?
Pretty factual, yeah.
What would you add? Anything, you know?
I have a wife, Emily. It would be the first thing.
She is over here on the right. I didn't want to read all the spouse and residence and all that.
Oh, so there's extra stuff. That's
the actual paragraph, though.
Well, it's a good start.
It's progress.
It's a good start.
Did one of your friends make a Wikipedia page?
I was going to say, who does that? Isn't that wild?
I made it for myself. No, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I'll have to track that person down and thank them, I guess, for getting the ball rolling.
Where's the best place to start? Is it to go right in to talk about the Desert Classic? Is there to start with the path that led you to that point?
I mean, yeah, there's obviously a lot that led me to that point. The Desert Classic's a cool story, and it's started a new one in a way, but there's a lot of history there that led me to that point.
All right. I think that's a tip to go for the history then.
Well, let's go back. So 6 or 7 years ago, you meet a young man named DJ Piasky, who will end up becoming, I would say, among your biggest champions, at least inside No Laying Up. Drafted you on my FedEx Cup team. I was screaming at the telecast.
What round were you drafted?
Who can remember those sorts of things?
I know it wasn't first.
It's like Tom Brady getting surpassed by all the guys that got surpassed him.
Exactly. I knew that he, you know what? I picked Cameron Champ first because, you know, I thought maybe, actually I picked Curtis first. I picked Cameron Champ second because I knew that would motivate him to a win. Mm-hmm. I dropped Adam down because I knew that he's a guy who's had a chip on his shoulder for a long time. That was going to motivate him to a win. I would maybe flip the question back to you guys and ask how many of your players have won this year.
I didn't get to draft. I was auto-drafted.
Listen, we don't need to get stuck in the weeds here. What I'm trying to say is Adam and I have known each other for a long time, and all of the things on the broadcast were, you know, this guy, he's coming out of nowhere. You know, this guy that many fans may not be familiar with. I'm like, that's bullshit, because I've been talking about this for a long time. Anyways, let's start in college. Okay, so Duke University. Why did you end up at Duke? And let's kind of expand on that Wikipedia paragraph a little bit and fill in a few more of the details for us.
Wow, that's a lot. All
right. What the hell just happened?
So we're moving away from the FedEx Cup then.
Yeah, we'll do a whole separate podcast on the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, it sounded like you had a pretty good theory there. Anyway, I grew up in St. Louis and knew I wanted to go somewhere other than the Midwest for golf. So I looked all over in the Southeast and actually settled on. I picked Florida and was verbally committed to going there. Obviously, an awesome golf program, cool school, great campus, good weather. And my parents kind of sat me down one more time, kind of late, before my junior year in high school, and said, you know, before we really commit fully here, maybe we should take another look at Duke. You really liked it. They were really interested in you. It's such an awesome school. Maybe you should go back and, you know, make sure this is what you want. So we went on another kind of a secret trip in a way to Duke and met some more guys on the team and got to know the coaches a little bit more, the school a little bit more, and fell in love with it. I was like, this place is, it's special. It's different. So I felt like that was where I wanted to go. And I was a really good junior player, but I wasn't a superstar by any means. And so I never really dreamed of that I'd be on the PGA Tour. I mean, it was a far-fetched dream in a way. It wasn't a goal of mine even. It was like, I just want to play good college golf and see where that goes. So anyway, ended up going there, and it was the best decision I made.
Were you there for any of the JJ Redick years?
No, I missed him by a year. On my visits, I went to a game and watched him in Cameron. It was pretty ridiculous.
Who was on the basketball team while you were there? Who are the biggest names that we would recognize?
We were pretty blue collar my 4 years there. Like my freshman year, they weren't
some Plumlees.
They weren't
there?
Very good, of course. Yeah, it was. I mean, we were like the sixth seed in the tournament freshman year, which is a terrible year for Duke, obviously. And then by my senior year, though, they were really good and they ended up winning the national championship. But even then, it was guys like John Shire, Nolan Smith, Kyle Singler, Brian Zubek. I mean, it wasn't the guys, the one and done guys that we have now.
That was the Butler, where they played Gordon Hayward Butler, yeah. Right, in that national championship.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so after, what was your career like at Duke? How did you do compared to what you were expecting yourself to do?
Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of expectations. I didn't know where I would fit in the team or belong. I mean, before I got there, they were really good. They had Ryan Blom, Nate Smith, and Jake Rudzinski, and they had some really good teams prior to me being there, just right up until I got there. And they were probably, before me, they were like a top 10 team, top 20 team, and that's pretty much how we were all my 4 years as a team. And I didn't qualify for the first event my freshman year. Second event was at Olympia Fields in Chicago, and I finished second, and the team won. And I was kind of like, boom, here we go. And I was like, all right, so I can play here. I belong. I can play on this team. I can compete in college golf with the best. And it was a stacked field. And so that gave me the confidence that I could play college golf at the highest level. So, but I had a pretty good career. It wasn't amazing by any means. I won one tournament my senior year and all ACC a couple times, but nothing too crazy.
So you leave Duke, and what's the next step from there?
Yeah, it was kind of that's the hardest thing is you turn pro and you're like, wait, I have to figure this all out on my own. And college golf or even junior golf, you have somebody there, either a coach or your parents or, you know, helping you all along the way of scheduling and booking hotel rooms and everything, entry fees, like. And now I was on my own. So I kind of had to figure it out. I had some older guys that have been out a year or two before me that I hung out with, but they helped me out. But for the most part, I was on my own. But I was playing the eGolf Tour, Hooters Tour, some Monday qualifiers, getting ready for Q School.
How does like the details of the mini tours, how does that work? Do you just send in like an application and say, all right, here's my resume, I'm playing in this? Do you need a resume of any kind? Do you pay an entry fee? How do the mini tours work for people that don't know?
They're all a little different. I don't know. I didn't play a whole bunch of them. I pretty much stuck to the eGolf Tour and the Hooters Tour. There are some incentives to doing well on those tours. So the more you play in, the more money you can make and you finish on those money lists. But I mean, for the most part, if you had a decent college career, you played D1 golf or had some sort of resume that they could kind of eyeball, they would let you in. But yeah, you pay in those days. I mean, you were paying up to $1,500 to get in and have at it.
It's like gambling almost, just like totally. Organized gambling.
Yeah, it is organized gambling. You put in your $1,000 to $1,500 somewhere in there, and there were anywhere from, you know, 150 to in the eGolf, they were killing it. Then they had like 300 players, two courses, and all around North Carolina, South Carolina area, and that was some of the most fun days, though.
At what point did there stop being entry fees? By the way.
PGA Tour Canada Latin America.
I thought you were going to say PGA Tour. I was like, all right, this asshole.
No, PGA Tour, Canada, Latin America, they have some, you know, when I played, it was like, I want to say it was around $150, $200 to play per week. But the web.com doesn't.
Which just kind of seems like a twist of the knife when you're on like PGA Tour Canada and you're driving all this way. And it's like, oh yeah, also it's going to be it's $150.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
Just a little bit something.
Yeah.
I know you're already razor thin margins. It's going to be $150 to play the tournament.
How well do you have to play on the mini tours to like break even? Or is it possible?
Yeah, no, it's possible. I mean, if you can win one or finish a couple top tens and make up for your missed cuts, you know, the weeks prior and all that, I mean, you can make some decent money. And it's changed a lot now, because when I first got started, there was no Latin America or Canada tour. So I was playing the eGolf Tour and Hooters Tour, and they were pretty popular. It's hard to get in. I mean, I played a Monday qualifier for a Hooters Tour event, and now they're having a tough time getting more than 50 guys to play some of those events. So it's changed a lot in the last 5-10 years.
What kind of golf stands out on those tours, and how is that different from the PGA Tour, or different from the Web Tour, or anything like that? Just as far as like people's games and what strengths get rewarded and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say in the mini tours, especially then the eGolf Tour, Hooters Tour, there was a lot of really good players. There's some studs that had either lost status on the web or, you know, were about to become, you know, PGA Tour members in the next year or two. And so it was all across the board, but they weren't very deep.
Did you ever have to run into Ted Potter on the Hooters Tour?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was like a superstar.
He's like the Babe Ruth of the Hooters Tour, right?
Yes. Yeah, he was. Yeah, if he was playing, you're just trying to finish second or third.
It's amazing to me. I don't know why it is. Maybe it shouldn't be. But the links that guys will go to get into tournaments. I mean, it is all you have. But guys will fly across, you know, fly to different countries to play Monday qualifiers just to get in a tournament where you're not guaranteed any money. I mean, how were you, I guess, at any point were you overwhelmed with how competitive like the lower stages of professional golf are?
Yeah, I mean, it was very top heavy, right? So when you talk about breaking even, I mean, you got to be finishing in the top 10. Well, there's more than 10 really good players. Sure, the bottom 20, 30, a lot of them are, you know, they're part-time job guys that are trying to play. And, you know, they didn't have a college career really. And, you know, they're just trying to play an event here and there. But at the top, they're really good. So, yeah, it's tough.
How old are you?
31.
Me too.
Weird flex.
Oh, I'm just, you know.
You wouldn't get it.
Yeah, you're not on the team, man. So we're talking about kind of 7-8 years here between college and where you are now. So beyond the Hooters Tour, you obviously played the Web Tour for a few years and stuff. But what were the points that, you know, what were kind of the high points of that 7-8 years? What were the low points of that 7-8 years? And how did that journey work out for you?
Yeah, I 2011 was an interesting year. So I graduated 2010. 2011, I had no status on any tour, but I actually missed 5 straight cuts on the eGolf Tour, feeling pretty bad about myself, pretty bad about my golf game. I wasn't really sure what I was doing. I was clueless. I was literally clueless with everything in my game. It was really bad. Well, I traveled to Columbus, Ohio, and qualified for the U.S. Open, had an amazing 36 holes, and I was thrown into the fire of the U.S. Open the next week at Congressional. And I missed the cut by, I don't know, 5 or 6 probably, but that was a pretty awesome experience. And I was like, all right, I'm good enough to get here. You know, it gave me some momentum, and enough so that I went through Q school that fall and got conditional status on the web. And so in 2012, I was playing the web and yeah, I played 17 events and didn't keep my card. But again, there was some like, I can play here. I just didn't have good status. And I don't know, it was my first year out, and then went back to like the mini tours. And then for a year, and then played Latin America, Canada for a year, both tours in the same year, which is crazy travel, but I did it. And then qualified again for the web.com tour and played out there the next 4 straight years. So the last 4 years I've been on the web.com tour, and I've been, most of those years I was pretty close to getting a tour card. I was keeping my card out there. And so there was some positive momentum there.
Is it full bore? Are you totally committed to this? And was there ever a doubt like, professional golf might not be for me? And like when you get to the third or fourth year of kind of bouncing around, do those doubts creep in at any moment?
For me, they didn't. I mean, it's been a pretty steady progression. Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of did it the classic way in a sense, because I played a couple years of mini tours, 4 years on the web.com tour, 5 total, but 4 years on the web.com tour, and everything was kind of trending, and
progressing.
I pretty much figured, like, as long as I felt my game was getting better each year, and I felt I was getting closer and closer and getting better, and I wasn't going backwards, I was going to keep playing.
How did you stake your mini tour career? I'm always fascinated at how guys, you know, whether it's sponsors or parents or jobs or, you know, it, I know there's a lot of different ways to do it. I guess, how did you do it, and how are kind of some of the other ways you've seen guys do that?
Yeah, I had some help from back home, for sure, that I couldn't have done it without their help. But yeah, guys have all kinds of crazy deals. I had some buddies that would have 20, 30 stakeholders that had shares of their company that would, you know, buy anywhere from $2,000 shares to $5,000 shares on up. And, you know, it's like a 1 year deal, and that was their money. Then they would get paid back. They had all different payback structures, and it can get pretty, pretty confusing pretty quickly. So, and some people just have rich families that just, right, you know, right out of the gate, they're fine. So, it is hard. It's really expensive.
Have you seen any guys get in some really raw deals?
I had heard of some, but not, I don't know anybody personally that, any really bad deals, but I know there's some out there.
Well, 'cause like you said, when you get out of college, like, you're on your own, like, it's all up to you to figure out so much of this stuff. And I'm sure when somebody throws a bunch of money at you, it's probably like very, very appealing, but I don't remember where we heard the stories recently of.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, I think one thing that's cool about your career is you kind of alluded to it, but, you know, always, even if they're small steps, like, always moving forward rather than, you see so many guys that get on the other side of that where, you know, they hit their high watermark and then all of a sudden they start backpedaling and they're back on the mini tours and they're back doing this. And it's almost like they're clinging to these kind of last chance opportunities. And there's almost kind of loan shark type vibes of these guys who are like, I'll stake you, I'll pay all your expenses, but I get 30% of your money for the rest of your life kind of thing. And like, that's a made up example, but I mean, there's a bunch of weird stuff like that. And I don't know, digging into the mini tours is, it's on our to-do list.
Well, it's hard.
That's what the Young Hitters program is now.
That's right. Exactly.
It's hard because
we're trying to keep those guys off the streets.
I hung out with one tonight. He's doing great.
Who's that?
Justin Huber.
Oh, one of our favorite young hitters. Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
One of your favorite ones.
One of our five favorite ones. Yeah, definitely.
So throughout your years on the web tour, where is your game improving? Where are you progressing, and how do you know that you are improving other than just kind of better finishes? How do you know physically that you're improving?
Yeah, it's kind of twofold. One, just the more years out there, the more comfortable you are with the golf courses, with the travel, all of it, caddies, everything. You can get you can get pretty comfortable on any tour the more years you're out there. So that was a big part of it, I think. I mean, being out there, last year was my fifth year. So some of those courses I'd seen so much that the hard holes didn't seem that hard anymore. The hard courses didn't seem that tough. But I started working with Josh Gregory about 2.5 years ago, and he really kind of revamped my short game, wedges and putting, and that helped my scoring big time. I was pretty average at all those, and then he really kind of changed the way I go about it and the way I practice it, and it's gotten a lot better.
If you get in the weeds on that, what needed to change, or what, it's a pretty hardcore golf audience that listens to this. I'm curious, like, the technical stuff that you're working on changing.
That's personal. I can't.
That's private. Yeah. It's a proprietary system.
No, I mean, for the most part, like even just basic chips, I was always, and bunker shots, I was always cutting across it a lot. So I was relying a lot on spin for my short game shots around the greens. And he taught me that, yes, that you can hit shots that way, and there are times when you have to, and different lies and all that. But for a straightforward chip, he really got me to feel a draw more. And so I feel like now for the most part, my standard chips have a little draw feel to it. That's probably the biggest change we made.
How would you sum up Josh? He seems like an interesting guy that works with a lot of interesting people.
Yeah, he's got a funny stable, I guess. There's some funny guys. But I knew him from college as a college coach. And when he started teaching, I was one of the first guys I went to. And I kind of learned about what he thought about the game and his theories and all of his focus, and went out to Dallas and spent 2 days with him. And I loved it. I mean, I loved being around him, first of all. I mean, he's a really fun guy. He's very positive. He's hilarious. We have similar personalities and interests. And so that helps. But I mean, he's super into short game putting, scoring, and he's really good at preparing guys for events. So I think that he's out on the PGA Tour every single week, some weeks just for a few days, but a lot of weeks he's here through Friday or Sunday. And he's really good at preparing you to play and to compete.
Were you working with a coach when you're on the mini tours and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've had a coach in St. Louis, Brian Fote, who's mm-hmm. out at Belle Reve, and I've used him since I was 9 years old, mostly full swing stuff, but I still keep in touch with him. He's a great friend.
So in your four consecutive web.com seasons, which before you earned your card in the 2018 season, but were any seasons there before that? Did you feel like you were on the verge? Did you have close calls for getting your PGA Tour card?
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a few years there, which was different than last year. The biggest difference in last year was a lot of time, I kind of hit it like a little plateau in the summer. I typically got off to mediocre starts, played really well in the spring, and was up there in the top 25 at some point and fell off towards the end, whether if it was missing cuts or just not finishing high enough to just finish it off. And then I'd go to the finals and have a pretty good finals, or have at least one or two good events. The first year at finals, I made all the cuts, but didn't finish high enough to finish in the top 25. So there was always like almost. So last year, that was the biggest difference, was I was able to finish it off and kept the pedal down.
What I loved after the Desert Classic, someone, I think it was maybe Sean Martin, friend of the pod.
Shout out.
I think he was asking about your last professional win, which was Hooters Tour.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you, I mean, I'd won like some, you know, US Open qualifiers. I'd won some mini tour, like
sure.
some one day stuff, but like the last multi-day win was yeah, the 2011 Hooters Tour event.
What can you tell us about that event?
It was the Wood Creek Open.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I Monday qualified for it.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where's Wood Creek?
In South Carolina.
Okay. Well, take us there. Tell us about the tournament. What was different then?
I'm sure people have heard enough about the 20. They've seen the highlights so many
yeah,
times.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a classic. I think it's on ESPN Classic pretty often. But yeah, I was playing primarily on the eGolf Tour that year. And so I wasn't like a full member of the Hooters Tour. So if you're not a member, you're like an alternate. You can sign up to be an alternate. Well, I was there. It was a full field, so they only had certain spots for qualifier. So I had to go to the Monday qualifier, and it was at the other course at Wood Creek that's like across the street. And it was like the worst day ever. Like Eric Axley was out there. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, this is tough. I'm trying to get into a Hooters tournament.
Shout out to the Stack and Tilt.
And so I don't know if that's a shout out or not. So I got in. I mean, it was terrible weather. I Mondayed in and played a practice on Tuesday or something. But I found myself playing really well and ended up in a playoff with Stuart Anderson, Canadian great.
Yeah.
And I chipped in actually on the first playoff hole on 18 there to win. And it was like $28,000. And I mean, I've never been happier.
I don't know how easy this is to answer, but like, what do you think kept you from winning more on, you know, whether it was Hooters Tour, eGolf, Web Tour? You know, it's funny and interesting to kind of see. And we kind of saw it with Keith Mitchell too. Like, played on the Web Tour for a while, never actually won, and then just breaks through in this huge moment at Honda. What do you think kept you from winning more? And you know, then obviously we'll get into what changed it in Palm Springs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, part of it's physical in the game. I mean, I needed to change some things in my game to get better and to score better and to be in the mix more often and be more consistent. But I've also done some work with Bob Rotella and on the mental side of stuff, and it's really helped me. Both on the course while I'm out there, handling bad breaks or bad shots and all the bad, and handling the good as well. And then also just the mental side of like of where you feel yourself in the game of golf, in the greater scheme of things and in life in general. And so that both of those have really helped.
That's some big topics. I think we should let's dive into that a little bit more.
Keep going.
No, that's fascinating. Like I think Bob Rotella is another one. You hear that name all the time, and I couldn't tell you like anything about him.
I think of hypnotism when I think of Bob Rotella.
Yeah,
that's
so
about it.
I know that's probably a lot more that something that is actually probably a little proprietary, but give us a little taste of what is that that you guys work on and what dive into that a little bit more.
Oh, I went, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago, but I went and stayed at his house and did what he does with all of his first time guys. And you spend like 2 days there.
And he hypnotized you.
Yeah. And the rest is a blur.
It was like, get out.
No, but it's a lot of both, like having that belief that you are a great player and you can compete and you know, the sky's the limit and believing that in yourself. But then there's also the, like I was saying, the on-course mental side of the game, which is so crucial. You have to be able to bounce back from bad breaks and to go into rounds with as much confidence as you can.
Was that hard to do? Like, was it hard to convince yourself of that at that time? Or I don't know. I'm picturing myself going through that and telling myself those things, I'd be like, no, well, I don't believe myself. Like, I know I'm lying to myself.
No, I mean, I think we all, as golfers, I mean, we have that, like, have that sense of confidence, but it's a matter of embracing that and owning it.
So I want to know, going back to your web season last year, you finished the season in a fury, kind of, you made five straight cuts, you get your card at Portland. What was that relief like? What was that celebration like? And what's that ceremony like?
It was unreal. So I actually got my card at Stonebrae, was where it like was official. I finished fourth, and that was enough to guarantee me no matter what happened in Portland the next week. So
taste it, Steph Curry.
Yeah. Yeah. When he shot 71 that first day, I was like, man, this guy beat me.
Did you beat him?
I believe that. Yeah, I did. Okay. Actually,
I believe our previously mentioned young hitter, Justin Huber, was sweating whether or not he was going to beat Steph that day. I remember him sending some pretty panicked text messages.
So when I actually got my like enough money, I guess, to finish in the top 25, that was when it was like, this is happening. Like, it's real. I did it. And it's it is a relief. That was the biggest sense of the feeling that I had was relief. Like, finally, I did my fifth year. Like, I've been close, and I knew I could do it, but I finally did it, and so that was awesome. And then, but I didn't really like celebrate or anything. I had a like 9 p.m. flight to Portland that I still took, and sat with Josh Teeter, who had just gotten his card as well. So we had a nice flight up to Portland, and finally got to the hotel at like midnight or something, and took the next day off in Portland. But that was like the moment, I'd say. But then the ceremony is pretty cool too. I'd seen it on TV, but it was pretty cool to actually get your bronze card in your hand, and you know it's engraved, and you're on the 18th green there in Portland, and with all like the class, you throw the hat up in the air, the picture, the whole thing it's pretty cool.
Do you have to show that bronze card a lot when you check into tournaments and stuff?
No, but I don't want to lose it.
Okay.
And so what would you say your approach was to the web finals? Because I believe after Max got his card, he said he was playing ceremoniously through the end of the finals. Well, what were your results in the web finals?
Yeah, he kind of screwed me, by the way, too, because we talked in, I guess it was in Jacksonville, at Atlantic Beach there, that he was like, oh, you'll be fine. You'll get into everything in the fall. You'll get into everything in the fall. Didn't happen. But well, that's another story. So anyway, it's kind of tough because you hear that you need to play for position. I finished 13th on the regular season, and I'm thinking that's fine no matter what happens in the finals, but you still want to. I mean, there's opportunity to make more money. There's also opportunity to finish higher up on the rankings, so you get better starts in the fall. And
you would have to finish better than 13th in the finals to bump up, correct? Or
it's just a continuation of you just have to protect your spot or whatever. So yeah, I missed all four cuts in the finals, and I think two of them by one, and it was kind of frustrating. But at the end of the day, I was like, I'm so excited about the future that I don't really care that much. And turns out it got me two less starts in the fall. So I only played three events in the fall instead of five. I was first alternate for one and second alternate for another.
Did Max get in any of those events because of you falling out? Maybe he was up to something.
Yeah,
I
think he might have. Yeah, I feel like he was ahead of me.
I love, so you come in and you've made the PGA Tour. You get to Safeway, first round, 66, top of the leaderboard for a while. What was that round like? And then what were kind of the ensuing three or four tournaments like?
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, yeah, you don't really know how you're going to feel or anything. I was just super excited. I had nothing to lose. I really wanted to get off to a good start. And fortunately I did, and didn't play great on the weekend, but it was kind of like welcome to the tour because I was up there at top five or something on Thursday, and then took a drug test Friday night that took like 3 hours because I was too diluted it was brutal. And
what happened?
I don't know. I was over. I drank too much water. I have no idea. It was bizarre. Anyway, so I was there until like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night on Friday night.
Flush all the stuff out of your
system. This is your first day on the PGA Tour?
Second day, yeah.
Second day.
I was like, geez, these guys are tough. No, so then I played like okay on the weekend. It was blowing really hard, but I dropped all the way down. I finished like 60th. And I was just thinking like, wow, like that happened fast. You go from like having a crazy high finish to beating like five guys. And it was kind of like, and you're in that category, you need to do really well to get points to reshuffle for the next start of the season in January. So it was pretty disappointing. And then, missed the next two cuts.
So, I mean, obviously you're playing like in your first PGA Tour event that wasn't the US Open, and it's probably not the first thing that comes to mind, but what does it come? You're literally playing for 10x a purse, 10 times the size of a purse that you've ever played for. Is that the first thing you think of when you go to tee it up? Is it like the fifth thing? Is that on your mind at all? I mean, a 10th place finish gets you $100,000. And is that something people think about in the early stages of their PGA Tour career?
I didn't, but I was just happy that I knew I was going to have a lot of chances. Yeah. So I think what makes it hard when you Monday qualify for one event, like this is it, like this, yeah, you have to do well this week. But when you have at least status, then you know you're going to have, you know, some 15, 20 starts at some point in the year, that it gives you a little bit of relaxation that you don't have to do well right now. But I've been fortunate over the whole career, even on mini tours, that it really hasn't crossed my mind on 18, like how much putts are worth. And I mean, it can be a lot sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, last week was a perfect example, but I really don't think about that when I'm on the course. I know some people do, and I don't know why I don't, but I definitely am aware of it afterwards. But luckily, unfortunately, I don't think about that out there at all.
What from a nitty gritty specific perspective, what actually changes that first week on the PGA Tour from the web tour, whether it's cars, hotels, like, I mean, you guys don't have kids, but daycare, you know, that, like that kind of stuff. What can you remember really being like, oh God, this is pretty cool out here?
The courtesy car thing is pretty sweet because you just get the baggage claim. And that's probably the worst part of traveling as a pro golfer is, I've always said, like, from the moment you get your bags at baggage claim to actually getting into your rental car can be sometimes so horrible of an experience. Like a shuttle to the rental car center, you wait in line, and then the car, like, is too small or something, it doesn't fit your stuff, or I don't know, it can just be a disaster. And you're carrying 2 or 3 50-pound bags sometimes, and it can just be terrible. So on the PGA Tour, you get up to your baggage claim, you get your bags, and there's always a stand right there, and there's either people that take your bags, or either way, your car is right on the curb in one form or fashion. And so they basically, you sign a form, they hand you your keys, and you're gone. So that's a pretty nice luxury.
That's what I remember. I was doing a podcast with Zach Blair when he was at the Webb Finals in Columbus in the fall of 17. And he was just going to his hotel, and he's like, dude, I got to get back to PGA Tour, man. I got a rental car this week. Like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, they're all like brand new nice cars. Yeah. I mean, the one this week had like 8 miles on it when I got it. So it's pretty nice. The second thing I'd say, DJ, would be the food.
Yeah.
The food is ridiculous out here. There's you can't find a bad meal.
And so you walk out, you're going out for practice rounds. Is there anyone, you know, it's not the biggest field, Tiger's not there, but is there anyone you're looking around like kind of starstruck at or kind of realizing like, oh my God, like I'm actually here? Does that practice round like feel different?
A little bit. I mean, well, being on the web for 5 years also, you know, built a relationship with a lot of these guys a lot of the 25 that moved on each year that are still out here. That was probably the most refreshing thing, was like that first few days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that was like, wow, I know a lot of guys out here. That really helps versus being maybe like 21 or two and walking out here not knowing anybody. And I saw a lot of familiar faces either from junior golf, college golf, or whatever. But yeah, seeing some of the mega stars like Phil was out there. And then a funny story was like on Wednesday, I'm hitting some practice putts and hitting some lag putts and just rip one that's going like 50 feet, you know, and I hit one pretty hard. And right then, like the ball, I'd already hit the ball, but right then Freddie Couples steps in to start doing like a putting thing. And I'm like, I see this happening in slow motion. It drills the side of his foot like pretty hard. Like he was only like, I'm trying to hit like a 50 footer and he's like 8 feet in front of 10 feet in front of me or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. Sorry, sir. You know, like I'm new here. Sorry about that.
He blows out his back.
I was going to say, you're just waiting for him to step on it like a banana peel, just blow out his back. He never can play golf again.
He laughed and he was cool about it. But yeah, seeing some of those guys for the first time is, you know, in the tournament. I've seen them outside of like tournament golf, but like seeing them in the tournament, you're in the field, and it was pretty cool.
You and Phil have had a rivalry for a long time. Is that where that started that week?
Yeah, it's pretty fierce. Yeah. Yeah. I know that people like to build up the
he got
the
you that one. Week. You
yeah.
Got
him at people build up him and Tiger, but yeah, the truth is it's Phil and Adam. Yeah. I think, yeah.
Well, I do want to get to this very shortly. We're taking a long time to get to it, but, a lot of people probably don't fully understand the pressure that you guys are under as soon as you get out there in that fall and how you have the short period of time you have, because you're talking about the priority you wanted, you know, for the fall. but they reshuffle again after RSM. So you go out after Safeway and you miss three straight cuts. Where do you fall in the priority after that?
Oh man, I think I was ahead of like two people. Brutal. I mean, yeah. there's 50s, right? So 25 from the regular season, 25 from the finals. And I was like 47 or something. I mean, it was pretty bad.
And then, but you're able to get in Sony, but you miss a cut there. And then we roll up to the Desert Classic. What is different in this week? Because by my count, your previous starts were three missed cuts, a T63, and four missed cuts at the end of the web season.
Oh, you got to love that. No, at Sony, dude, I was...
He was due.
Even at Sony, I wasn't in the field. I mean, we kind of took a chance by going out there, and I was going to do the Monday qualifier, and I got in the field late. I mean, I was on my third hole in the Monday, and they said, you're in the field. So, got in, ended up missing the cut by two, but I felt like my game was okay. Like, it wasn't terrible. I was pretty close.
You're not putting up high scores.
No. It was pretty close. And then got to the desert, and... I don't know. Everything kind of started falling into place like Sunday afternoon, Monday morning. I was hitting it really well. I worked a little bit with Josh and playing some practice rounds with, I played with Derek Fathauer and Josh Teeter. And we were all making a ton of birdies, but I made like 10 birdies or something on Tuesday and like six on Wednesday. I was just feeling really good. I knew you had to make a lot of birdies out there, and that's what I've been doing. And I don't know though exactly. Everything mechanically was feeling really good though.
Do you think, I mean, the Desert Classic is famous for being such a birdie fest, as is the web.com tour. Do you think that style of, you know, learning to need to go low on the web tour really helped you in an event like this?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that whole web tour going low thing's a little overblown. I still think if you've shot like two under,
who says that? Forget
I feel like if you shoot two under every round, you're going to get your tour card on the web.com tour, believe it or not. You're going to miss a boatload of cuts. You're going to miss like 15 cuts, but you're also going to like win maybe once or twice in a few top five. I mean, it's a little, but yes, okay. I did learn to go low out there on that tour and be comfortable being like five, six, seven under par. Cause it's a little uncomfortable, like for a lot of guys to be that.
You're looking at one. I'm terrified.
To have that as your norm, to be four, five, six under, is it takes a little bit of getting used to. Because my college golf experience was not like that. If you shot 72 every round, you're an All-American. You're best player on your team. So it takes a little bit. It took me a little bit of time to get comfortable with that. So yeah, I'd say that experience helped.
So you're going into the Desert Classic. Your game feels good. Open with a 63. You shoot 71 the second round, 63 round three, and you're paired with Phil Mickelson in the final group. What do you think, like, I don't know the answer to this, but what do you think your odds were to win the tournament going into that day? Like, in your own mind, what are you really?
What was I
thinking? Like, what are you thinking? Like, do you think I have a true chance to win this? Or are you thinking I want a top five? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you thinking going into that round?
I didn't think about winning. That's for really? Sure. No, it didn't cross my mind. I mean, Phil had a three-shot lead. He's won 100 tournaments. Like, he's going to win this thing. And then I'm, like, eighth or something alternate for Farmers the next week at Torrey Pines. I need to finish top 10 to get into the tournament the next week. I was like, I just need to play okay. You know, finish top 10. Let's not embarrass myself out there. And then, but honestly, I just went into it like, don't have any regrets. Really have fun with it. Enjoy it. You never know if you're ever going to be in the final group on the PGA Tour again. And I was a rookie. I am a rookie, and I'm playing with a legend of the game. Like, just enjoy it, have fun, and don't get caught up in all the moment of all of it, and just take it literally one shot at a time. But literally, just like chill out there and just be present.
What did you do the night before? Was your phone blowing up? And was
I had some funny texts with some friends about, you know, playing with Phil and all that, but people for the most part left me alone.
So what, I think, you know, we're watching it, we're screaming at the TV, but I think it probably didn't register for a lot of people that you had the chance to really win the tournament until you get to 18. And it wasn't before you hit your approach shot. You get to that where you hit that tee shot. First of all, there's water left. Are you bailing right intentionally on this tee shot? What's your mindset when you're standing on the
18th? Well, let's not skip 17, which is an island green.
Correct.
And
I get excited. We skipped the chip-ins. We skipped a lot.
I get excited. Yeah. All right.
Well, I mean, it wasn't over till at least I hit the green on 17. Where I was like, okay, we're good. This was a successful day now at this point. And
I could still make nine on the last hole and finish in the top 10.
Exactly. But my goal is still intact here. So I just floated an eight iron in there in the middle of the green. But 18, definitely, like, I favored the right side for sure. You got the world right and you just have nothing left.
But are you thinking about winning as you're playing 18?
No.
Still not
thinking about winning.
What was the situation? Were you tied?
You're tied.
We're all three tied.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Me, Hadwin, and Phil were right. all tied. And I hit one up the right side, and you know, I'm like, that's perfect. I know it's not in the fairway, but it's not in the water and it's not in the grandstands. So we're good. And got up there, it's on the downslope of the hill, like not ideal. I mean, if it would have just gone another 2 or 3 feet, flat lie, we're good. No, it's like on the downhill. It's going to be a really awkward lie. Side hill, downhill, ball way below my feet. And
which is hard to see on TV. It's hard to, if TV flattens everything, right? So like how far below your feet was it, or, you know, yeah, 1 to 10 difficulty. What was it?
I mean, the stance and the lie was probably like a 5 or 6 mm-hmm. difficulty, but then like the pressure of the moment adds a little bit, of course, and then also the water left.
5.5.
Yeah. The water left adds to it. And then if you can bail way right, but that's going to be a tough up and down from way right. And at that point, I was swinging good. I hadn't really missed a shot in a while. I'm like, I can do this. Like I got this. And just smoked a 7-iron, pulled it a little bit, but I looked up and it was going right at the flag, and it flew a little farther than I could even hoped it did, and ended up being like 13 feet. But I'm still thinking, I'm still looking at Phil and Adam in the Hadway, or Adam in the fairway. And I look and I'm like, Phil's going to probably like hold this or maybe put it to a foot, one of the two. And Adam Hadwin's a machine and he's going to put it to, worst case, he's like 10 feet. And neither of those happened. I mean, Phil left it 30, 40 feet short. Yeah. Hadwin hits it over the green and I'm like, wait a second. Okay, so this actually, I remember actually asking my caddy, I was like, we're tied, right? Like, it's actually like, I got this right in my head, right? And yeah, let it play out.
Well, did you, what kind of a pep talk do you give yourself before that shot? I mean, are you really nervous getting ready to hit it? Because you hit it, it seems like you were so committed to the shot, and the swing you made was obviously very committed. So is that something you have to trick your brain into? Is that Rotella coming out? Like, what do you do before a shot like that?
A little bit. I mean, I hadn't had a whole lot of shots like that before, certainly not in that moment.
Do you draw
moment,
back but. On the Wood Creek Classic?
Yeah, I couldn't remember. It's too long ago. But I just knew I didn't want to like overthink it. I knew I didn't want to like just overanalyze the number, the wind, or what it, any of it. I knew I just kind of needed to like get up to it and hit it and just be confident in what I was doing. So I kind of hurried through it a little bit and just let it go. And I was a full swing, so I was able to go at it pretty hard, which helped, and kind of fell down the hill a little bit, lost my balance, and walked after it, which actually was more of a losing my balance than a confident like, oh yeah, it's going in the hole, the right club today.
When I saw you like stepping through it or kind of falling off to the side, I was like, that did justice for how far below your feet it really was and how you had to really go after it. So you get up to the putt. Was it Phil or Hadwin that putted before you that had just missed it? I think it was Phil, correct? From much further away. Did you learn a lot from his putt?
Not really, because he was on a somewhat similar line, but way further. But our shadows were so long at that point. It was so late in the day that I had to go miles out of the way. I was on the other side of the green to get my shadow out of his way at all. And so he putted. By the time I got up there, I was like, I caught the very end of it, but not a whole lot.
A really good quote afterwards where you were saying like, yeah, it's just kind of one of those like sense of calm and you just feel like it's like, you know, it's going to go in. Is that true? Was that in the moment? What was your thinking over the
putt? Yeah, I didn't want that to come off as like a cocky.
No.
Like,
it came off great. It was
just
awesome.
Beat Phil. You can be as cocky as you want.
Yeah.
No, it was like, I think I said like as all golfers, I think have felt at some point, either if they're by themselves or in a tournament or whatever, but like you get over certain putts and you're like, I got this. Like, I'm going to make this. You see the line, you see it going in the right pace, and you literally feel it. And it was one of those putts that I was like, I've been putting well all week. I got this. I got the read. I got the speed. I know everything. Like, I got it. And I mean, maybe I just kind of tricked myself into thinking that, but at the same time, like, I was really confident about it.
What was we should have asked this a few minutes ago, but what was the interaction with Phil on the first tee like? I assume that's the first time you met him, actually. And then what was he like afterwards? I mean, did you guys talk at all or no?
Yeah, he was great. I met him in the scoring tent, and you know, he just said, you know, let's have some fun today, and that was kind of it. But
let's go party.
Pretty much. He's like, yeah, squeezing my hand, crushing it. No, but he, you know, we
he's a lot bigger than people realize.
He's big dude.
He's a unit.
He's a big dude. Yeah, and we got out there, but he was pretty talkative on the course, I'd say, and I had known Hadwin from before, so we talked a little bit, and Hadwin and Phil knew each other. And so, I mean, we talked a little bit. There's a few waits a few times that Phil told some stories, and I mean, he was cool. And then the back nine got a little more quiet. And, but even at walking off 16, I remember we teed off because the NFL football was going on. So he was super into that. And we all were, but they,
he was wondering about the betting.
I was going to say, that's too easy.
You said it, not me. And so the security, like the cop that was walking with, I'd say us, but really him, he was keeping us updated on the scores of the football. And so it was a pretty fun day because, I mean, we're all pretty into the football too. And but the last two holes, we didn't say much.
So you make the putt, and I love what after everyone finishes out, you know, Emily runs out on the green and whatnot, and the camera just catches you, and you like say it out loud, kind of what we're all thinking was, holy crap. Like, is it, because I feel like it almost didn't really register for you until a few seconds after you made the putt that you just won the tournament.
Yeah, totally. I promise you, I was not thinking about winning until, I mean, once it was my turn and I knew like that was the putt to win it, I let myself go there for a second, but that was it. And then it went in, and I was just—I don't know what I felt. That was just—it was a bizarre feeling. It was an out-of-body experience. It really was.
Is it? I mean, life-changing is the first thing that the broadcast will say after somebody wins a tournament like this. Is it truly life-changing?
It's been. People have said that, and I just don't feel that. I think it's definitely career-changing. It's changed a lot of my golf life and my tournaments and all that stuff. But
you got into Torrey Pines, which is very cool.
I got into the Farmers, which is pretty sweet. But
in every tournament for the next 3 years.
Yeah, that's cool. Years. Yeah, that's what I mean, though. Like, it's changed that. But like the stuff that Emily and I are, you know, what we do at home, and like it's all been the same. We haven't made any extravagant purchases yet. I mean, we might soon, but
we're still getting hit with taxes pretty hard on that.
California is not the best state to win in. But
winning an event at that time of year is about the best time you can win one because of how long your exemption lasts. Because you get two full seasons after this one, correct?
Right. So the rest of 2019. Season and then all of the next two seasons,
which just frees you up to just play, you know, great golf in your next five tournaments, right?
pretty mediocre golf.
Well, before we get to that, how many texts did you get after you'd won?
I don't know if Keith Mitchell is lying or not, but he got a lot more than me.
Yeah,
I got like 600 something, 700 texts.
Okay, because you didn't reply to mine, so but that's fine. It's I'm not offended now. If you got 600, that makes a lot of sense.
I had an old phone, an iPhone 6, and it kept shutting down when I was trying to like respond to people and stuff. It would just like have that little like circle pop up in the middle of the phone, and like it kept like literally dying. And so I had the next week in San Diego, I got a new iPhone.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, that's very cool. Yeah, I had to spend the money.
Pat myself on the back here. Yeah.
I've gotten ghosted by a lot of people. I've not heard my phone was dying every time I tried to reply to your text.
That's my
I was getting
excuse.
Too literally too many text so messages to reply.
I was trying to reply to you, so I promise.
It's like whack-a-mole. Okay, so tell me as specific as you can. This is a Tron question.
Why isn't he here to ask this?
It's a small hotel room. We didn't want to come in hot.
Fair enough.
And he's an opposing captain. He gets hostile. I don't trust him around my players, frankly. What happens like literally after the win? What's all the things that you have to go do?
Immediately after?
Yeah.
There were a lot of interviews.
Like, what's the rest of your night, basically?
Yeah. I walk out of scoring. It was like live Golf Channel interview, a few other little interviews like Sky Sports and some other ones. And then you go out on the 18th green. And there, I mean, I'm shaking. They have a whole like basically it's like a stage setup almost on the 18th green with a podium, and I mean I'm shaking hands, meeting all these people in these nice coats and suit and ties and all this stuff. I don't know who anybody is. I don't know.
Do you remember one name from it?
Yes, but I don't want to tell it on the air.
They wouldn't want to be embarrassed.
Yeah, out of respect for them. But yeah, I mean, with everybody associated with the tournament, the golf course, the sponsors, everything, and so you know, you're just like overwhelmed. My wife's there, my dad's there, and I'm freaking out. And some old friends of mine, some other players, some caddies are there, and there's just a lot going on. But they had a little presentation on the 18th green, and then there's more like local news TV. And a couple of different stations there, a couple of reporters, a lot of pictures. So meanwhile, all of this, I'm holding the trophy. And it's a crystal, like it's a nice crystal heavy trophy. And I'm taking a ton of photos of my family, with these people, that people, all these pictures. And I, my arms, I'm not kidding you, were burning, burning from holding this thing.
That's how Tiger got so jacked.
Tough burden. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, but at some point, Emily was like, do you want me to hold that for a second? Like, can I just see it? I was like, yes, please take it. And I'm not kidding you, my arms were like, were so sore. Like, it was the heaviest thing I've ever felt. So, I mean, I was holding that thing for like 20 minutes. Like, it was brutal. But anyway, then they cart you up to the press center, and you're answering a bunch of questions on, you know, and that was pretty surreal feeling to be up there, like, with the trophy and answering these questions from the greats like Sean Martin. And
had you been in a media center before, like up on the, in the interview room?
Not like sitting up there actually giving the interview. I've seen one, yes, but no, I haven't been the subject of one. So you're up there for, I don't know, 30 minutes or something or more. And then that's it. You're good to go. So, we just went to the locker room, cleaned out the locker, and went to dinner.
So is it hard to get yourself back up for the next event after winning? Is it hard to like start back over from scratch, or what's your mindset going into the very next week?
There's a totally different feeling. It was pretty, a lot of people warned you, like, you got to give yourself a lot of extra time every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because everybody that sees you for the first time are going to congratulate you. And it's true. Like, it was overwhelming. It was awesome. I mean, it felt really good to be, you know, recognized, but at the same time, it took a lot of energy and stuff out of you. There's a lot of interviews as well. And there's a lot going on at Torrey, and I'd never played it before. I'd played it once for fun, but hadn't played it for the tournament. So I had a lot of prep to do. There's two courses, and it was a lot, but I mean, obviously I was playing well, so I didn't have to do a whole lot of, I didn't feel like I had to do a whole lot of maintenance on my game, but, it was a different feeling teeing it up for sure. Different level of confidence, I guess, or belonging.
Is it a weird feeling, you know, going from where you were basically through that third round, everything in your career, you know, backward from there, to flash forward to after that putt goes in, basically every fan that's at the tournament, every security guard, every media person, like literally all of their eyes are focused solely on you. Like, you are the center of attention. I, you know, not even to mention like all the TV people watching. I got to think that's got to be like a very weird feeling, surreal feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird. And it still is, to be honest. Like, even, you know, people today will say, you know, nice win, you know, last month or a couple of weeks back, you know, at the desert. And it's to be like, just recognized without any sort of teeing it up for them, I guess. And they're telling them who I was, like, they, like, to be recognized like that is pretty weird.
How often did that happen before you won, like at airports or anything?
Zero.
Really?
Zero. yeah, no, zero.
You're gonna be buying a privacy yacht just like Tiger.
I mean, I'm not saying it's like right. That like those guys live a whole nother life, but it's enough that it's different.
This is a very cliche question, but what was kind of the coolest thing you heard after the win, or the coolest, you know, congratulations you got, or something like that?
That's very cliche.
I know it is. Well, that's why I preface it with that.
I'd say the next week at Torrey, just to have all the, you know, the superstars of the tour recognizing me, coming up and congratulating me, you know, Justin Rose and Rory was there, and Jordan and Ricky, and, you know, they were all like, you know, congratulating me, and it was pretty surreal.
So what is your new policy now? Is it missed cut or top 10? Is that the only way you're going to play it here?
Go big or go home. Yeah. What's funny is I've always like prided myself on being a pretty consistent guy. Yeah. And like, I'm always around, but, you know, I don't have a lot of wins or anything, but I have a lot of good finishes and pretty consistent. And, you know, I never shoot really high and never necessarily go super low, and pretty, it's kind of hanging in there and like making a lot of cuts and all that. And like, this year has just been a bizarre stretch, like not how I envisioned it at all. Not even how I see myself.
That's the way to do it on the PGA Tour, though.
That's right.
No hit doubt.
That's the Scott Stallings plan you're on right now.
I've always said, like, I'm envious of those guys that are either like, I'm going to win this thing, or screw it, I'm finishing DFL. And here I am, like, as one of those guys.
You should be that guy now. I like that. Because it got overshadowed because of what Molinari did. But you made an enormous run up the leaderboard at Bay Hill last week. And you doubled the 17th to fall back into a tie for 10th, which shows how hot you got. But take me through kind of that back nine. First of all, how you ended up in the greenside bunker on the 10th hole, I still don't understand. I heard you hit the cart path is what I heard.
I heard that too, but I didn't see it. So I can't confirm or deny it. I did not see it hit the cart path, but the volunteer said it did. But you can't trust them. All the time.
You probably hit it 400. You probably carried it 400.
I'd
that be out of the ordinary for you? You would say,
yeah, probably in Florida. Yeah. In Florida,
yeah.
It is
sea level. Yeah.
So you eagle the 10th hole, eagle the 16th hole. What happened on 17? You got cut from coverage. They didn't even show your double on
17. It's funny. There was a camera after hitting the water. There's a camera right on the tee box. The guy, the cameraman right there, right in my face with that camera, like right after I hit in the water. I'm like, this is all over the TV. Like, gosh, this is bad.
Do you start thinking, here I go again. I'm going to come from behind and win this thing.
A little bit. But yeah. I was so ahead of the leaders that those guys were only making the turn probably or whatever. So that was there was still a lot of golf behind me to be played. And some of those holes are some birdie holes. So I didn't really think about winning, but there was a British Open spot on the line that I, in hindsight, found out that I was in the running for. I missed by one, so that's unfortunate.
Did you know? You didn't know while you were playing that you were in
the running. I knew that there were three spots, but I didn't necessarily know how to get them or who was eligible or who was on the leaderboard eligible. So I didn't know the details of it, but yeah, if I would have finished bogey par or finished one over those last two instead of two over the last two, I would have had a spot.
Do you immediately get thrust into the like the featured groups and that kind of stuff after the win?
I wouldn't say featured groups necessarily, but
the category changes.
So explain that for people who don't have any idea what you're talking about.
So there's like three or four levels of categories for tee times, and so it's basically you got like let's call it the superstar category of the big name guys, you know, Tiger, Phil, Jordan, Ricky, those kind of guys, and then you have my category, which is now past champion or tournament winners. And so anybody who's won a tournament or even top guys in the world, and that's kind of like the next category down. And then there's two more categories below that. So I went from the web.com category, which is like, you know, first year guys or low status guys. And you're getting, I was last group off two of the three events in the fall. And I was like second to last off in Hawaii. And so you're in the bottom two or three groups every wave to being thrown into the good tee times of being earlier in their wave.
So this is going to come out after the players, but we're here at the players this week. What does it mean to be in this event? Does this event feel different to you so far?
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, just the presentation of it all. Like I knew it was going to be crazy, and I've been to Sawgrass a bunch of times before, but never for the tournament. And it is going to be nuts.
Awesome. Well, best of luck. Thank you for joining. Thank you for letting us crash your hotel room on 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And
hey, you guys are welcome to stay.
Your wife is looking at you like, what? They will stay. They will do it. They will do it. Do not invite them to do that. So, all right, Adam, best of luck. Congratulations on the win. It's been awesome to follow your success on the PGA Tour so far. And keep knocking those top 10s out.
Yeah, that's what it's, yeah. Go big or go home. And DJ, we'll have our team meeting tomorrow.
Well, yeah, or we were thinking maybe we'd have it at Augusta. That might be the next best chance to get together. So
Okay, that makes sense.
I know we just wrapped. We literally didn't ask about the fact that you're going to play in the Masters.
Major, that one's on me. Yeah. Continue.
Are you excited to play in the Masters?
I'm very excited to play in the Masters. You know, it's going to be great. It's going to be surreal to be out there and just for the actual tournament. I've been there as a spectator and I've played it in November, so this will be a totally different experience. But
how'd you play?
I remember being like three or four under through like six or seven and shooting like 75. So I don't know. Okay, I guess. But this will be a totally.
I feel like I've played that course.
strikes and gutters. Yeah.
This will be a little different, but it's in this game, like especially being a rookie, like you can't think that far in advance. And I honestly haven't had time to like sit and think about it all that much, but it's like each week's a new week for me and it's a new course, new experience. So that's only three tournaments away from me, but it sounds like a year from now.
At what point did you start thinking about, or did you realize you got in the Masters? It's overwhelming when you win the tournament, I imagine, but when do you start thinking, oh my God, I'm also in the Masters?
So after I finished, I went to the scoring trailer and in there was Rick Wild Scribbs, who's a great guy. He's on the web.com tour as a truck guy for a long time. And now he's a scoring official for the PGA Tour. And so I had a relationship with him. So I walk in and I sit down and I don't know, at some point after I signed it, and he just kind of looked up and he's like, and by the way, I need a few tickets to Augusta. And that's when it hit me that I was like, really? Shit, I'm playing the Masters.
How many tickets have you gotten beat up for already?
It hasn't been too bad.
Really?
It hasn't been too bad. I think people know it's extremely limited and we don't get a whole lot. So it's been tough.
How many do you actually get? Do you know?
We get eight.
Okay. That's pretty fair, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know? Okay. I got the eight rattled off already.
I don't know. I've turned that over to my wife and my dad to kind of sort out and
thirsty
kind of manage
DJ.
Your team. No, I'm good. I'm good. I've seen it. It's all right.
You're an alternate.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. First alternate.
He's going to Monday qualify for those tickets.
We do take bribes.
I would recommend one thing. Now that you're a winner, I know you just said your wife and your dad. I would start calling them your team.
My team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My support team.
My team's really been working on that. Yeah. I think picking up the lingo and really, you know, starting to get some of those idiosyncrasies of a tour winner is one thing I'd like to see from you, I think.
Are you talking as is my FedEx Cup captain or as a friend or who's?
But I'd like to think both. Okay, yeah, both. Yeah, I think both.
That's what makes this team so special.
That's exactly right.
It's hard to argue that. DJ's running away with it thanks to people like you. So, all right, best of luck this week and thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Be the right club today.
Yeah. Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect